My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Today's program has been pre-recorded. Now a special Talk Radio 1210 WPHT presentation. It's Readin', Writin', and Reason. Now here's your host, Dom Giordano.
Hey everyone, welcome into this week's edition of Readin', Writin', and Reason. And boy, do we have a lot of great guests, a lot of stuff in the news to talk about. Here's something. The University of Pennsylvania, which had a lot of problems with encampments and all the nonsense, what are they doing now? Well, they now employ, this might be the first in the nation, a vice provost. That sounds like a $250,000 a year job, solely focused on climate change. The vice president for climate change policy and action is tasked with supporting Penn's leadership in addressing the climate crisis, according to the campus newspaper. That will include responsibilities such as implementing the campus-wide climate and sustainability action plan, leading academic programs in climate science and policy, and enhancing education and training focused on climate mitigation and adaptation. They have identified fighting climate change as a core part of its strategic framework. Every person at Penn and all that we do has nexus to recruit the best minds, fuel initiatives that advance understanding and promise solutions, and adopt institutional best practices for the sake of our future and planet. I would like to set a mission to chronicle what the 50 or so bigwigs at Penn's campus, what they do in their own lives based on this model, based on climate. It would be interesting to see if they're just doing offset carbon footprint stuff, or are they actually living this? Sort of like Al Gore. All right, we'll have more on that as we continue to take a look at this. By the way, we know that when you look at presidential polling in the big race, that many times illegal immigration even trumps inflation as the number one issue. Sometimes it's second. And I'm looking at a story from the Fox News Digital. The border crisis is reportedly overwhelming Washington, D.C. schools. The number of families arriving in D.C. with children in need of immediate language supports and others has increased more rapidly than anticipated by the Department of Health and Human Services or the Office of Immigration Services. So all these kids are arriving in a school district which is already under fire. And the emails that came out this week cover 2022-2023, and they indicate the difficulties they're having with reaching all these non-English speaking students, many of whom in any language are not doing well academically. Well, you can imagine the turmoil in their lives, and plopping all these kids down in this one school district is fraught with difficulty. So illegal immigration is the issue that is out there that is influencing this, making it even harder in the public schools. Wanted to tell you, though, on my radar screen here on Reading, Writing, and Reason is the annual budget battle going on in Harrisburg. June is when they start this. July, early July, is when the budget's supposed to be done. And this is unique because you have a governor who's a progressive but has at least given lip service to the idea that when it comes to issues of school choice, every child is a child of God. This is Governor Shapiro. So the fight for school vouchers in Pennsylvania is back. The Inquirer reporting that both sides have new strategies. And the we're going to hear from Martina White, State Representative Martina White, who is one of the leaders on the voucher side. She's coming up today on Reading, Writing, and Reason. So in the past, Governor Shapiro cut a deal with Senate Republicans for a $100 million voucher program to send some students in low-performing districts to private schools. He vetoed it, you may remember, his own program, when it couldn't pass the Democrat-controlled House. This year, says the Inquirer, school choice advocates are well-funded as ever, putting millions behind their push to get the state to give students in struggling schools a chance to attend private schools. They talk about teletown halls, thousands of Philadelphians, mailers, etc. They have organized more than a dozen. Now, public school proponents have organized more than a dozen unions and advocacy groups for an education campaign that includes knocking on 60,000 doors in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to spread their view. What are these unions doing is the question I always have. Democrat State Senator Anthony Williams, Philadelphia, West Philly, he says we're in crisis. The house is burned down, and we're going to argue with what type of water to put the fire out, meaning how bad these schools are performing. So I expect this time around that we are going to see some movement here toward expanding something along the lines of vouchers. By the way, though, this from a Chester County report, Democrats are also attacking cyber charters and taking a lot of money out of the budget that would go to cyber charters. Now, I would rather see an in-person charter school, but I have to tell you, the attacks on cyber charter schools are ridiculous. They border on being slanderous, in my view. And again, they are just another alternative for parents. You know, the mission of this show, Reading, Writing, and Reason, is parental rights. The parent is the first and best teacher. The parent is the one that knows the child the best and has the best interest of the child at heart, second to none. So, be looking for a huge battle around this. And I predict that this time around, we are going to see more money that is going to go into programs. I don't have a crystal ball on this of exactly how it will play out, but I think it's going to play out with the help of Governor Shapiro. And I think this is a good thing. Parents should have the choice in this matter. They're paying tax money to start with. Many of these schools, for a variety of reasons, are never going to perform enough. I could tell you as a former teacher, taught in Camden, Darby Township, places like that, just keeping discipline is often a difficulty. You get worn out by that. How much can you really advance students? Any teacher in those schools will tell you that. Whereas in the charter school and or in the private school, you can get bounced. If you're the student and you're not performing, you're acting up, that's a big advantage that the public schools don't have. All right, now on the other end of the spectrum, on the negative side, California legislature is considering a bill sincerely that would ban schools from notifying parents of gender changes. Yep, the California state legislature is considering a new bill that would prevent schools from notifying parents if their children decide to change genders. It's backed by the superintendent of public schools instructions, Tony Thurman, who was booted for disorderly conduct from a school board meeting last year in Chino Valley, California, where the board approved a policy requiring schools to notify parents if children wanted to change genders, overriding Governor Newsom's policy for the state of California as a whole. Now, in what universe is something like this going to fly? Maybe in California it will. As I said, is there any doubt? The bottom line is that parents, and this should be common sense, their rights when it comes to their child supersede the rights of the so-called experts, be they public school teachers, be they whatever they are. Now, if the parent is abusive, if the parent is potentially violating laws that we currently have in the books, you have a concern about that? Okay, that's different. But short of that, how many times do we have to go over this? That parental rights are cherished for obvious reasons, because people, if their parents want to be supported by the broad swath of Americans across all kinds of lines. You may remember when Terry McAuliffe was running in a blue state, Virginia, for governor against Glenn Youngkin. He went on this rant about experts in schools and tired of these parents trying to think that they're an expert. And you know that Youngkin successfully appealed to parents and parental rights. He is a national figure as a result of that. Now, I'm not saying every parent in every situation, but what I am saying is it's an obvious thing that parental rights, until challenged successfully in some way of something, I don't know, in an individual case, they are the gold standard. They are the standard that people widely support for the obvious reasons, and I'm very glad about that. And that's why, how many things do we talk about week to week here on Reading, Writing, and Reason? They are the centerpiece of what we do. All right, now coming up, we have State Representative Martina White. She's the lawmaker from Northeast Philadelphia pushing for expansion of, call it what you will, vouchers here in Pennsylvania. And then commentator Guy Shiraki with an inside report on exactly how this might work, where the public is, how it's going to go down. So State Representative Martina White is next on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm gonna teach ya.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm Jared Dano with you. Dan produces Reading, Writing, and Reason. State Representative Martina White has been a driving force for getting kids to have a shot and their parents at a better life by going to better schools. It's that simple. And she believes, I think, that this year, Governor Shapiro is going to follow through on what he almost did last year in Pennsylvania, and we're going to see something on that. So without further ado, here's my most recent interview with State Representative Martina White. Martina, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Dom. Thanks for having me. It's very interesting that you were just mentioning that the president is in town. And you're right. School choice is certainly can solve a lot of the problems facing all Philadelphians, but in particular, the black community here.
Yeah. And again, coming to, and you know this as a true Philadelphian, the history of Girard College and all that, and predictably, we think he's going to say what he said at Morehouse about discrimination and all those things. And yet he and the vice president have to be, maybe in their heart they are too, enemies of any kind of school choice because they're going to side with the teachers' unions over the parents. Martina, do you see in your conversations with Democrats in Harrisburg, we know people like Ayman Brown and some others are on board. Do these people really believe this is the wrong course of action? What Shapiro, I think, in his heart is on board with, it seems. Or is it the pressure is just so much from teachers' unions and progressives?
So I think that Biden is stuck in just the classical ways of radical Democrat leftists, you know. Mm-hmm. They, I think that they are more or less pandering, which is really a shame because in Philadelphia, like, there are a lot of families who actually need the help and support that can come from getting students a better quality education. It actually is one of the most beneficial ways to help reduce crime is to have a high quality educational resource available to you as a young person. So the Lifeline scholarships that we've been advocating for and that the governor apparently is supportive of some form of a program like it, you know, that could give students a tremendous opportunity. They would get access to state dollars that they can take to any school of their choice that works best for their educational needs. So by doing that, we can literally change the lives of children all across Pennsylvania, but in particular in underserved populations here in Philadelphia. And for the president to just ignore that fact is despicable. And I think it just goes to show you that this isn't, you know, something that's new to us. This is something he's been doing, right? Like he's blocked 30,000 jobs from being created here in southeastern Pennsylvania by halting LNG export permits. So, you know, he doesn't care about Pennsylvania. Why he's coming here, I guess it's to see if he can drum up some support before November, but I don't think people are falling for it anymore. They want real action. They want real solutions, and the Democrat Party is not providing them at all.
Yeah, exactly. And again, the whatever that secret sauce with President Trump is, the South Bronx, this is a different sort of Republican persona. The upside, he's breaking through, particularly with African-American males, what you and others have been talking about for years, Democrat Party taking people for granted. We're seeing some breaking, and that's all that you need is a little bit of that. And Martina, the thing I like about the school choice thing, in addition to the kids, it empowers parental rights. These parents know better for their kid. I don't care if they're uneducated or whatever. They know their kid. They want the best for their kid more than any organization could be. It's the parent that wants that.
100%, Dom. School choice is what provides parents the ultimate opportunity for their child to go to the school of their choice that they know will benefit their child the best and give them the, you know, the best chance for reaching their full potential in life. And so that's why I'm a huge proponent of it. And I think that the Democrats' policy of leaving kids trapped in failing schools hasn't worked. It's still not working. And we need real change here in Pennsylvania. And I know we can do it, especially because there's a lot of Democrats, like you shared, other state electeds. Senator Anthony Williams for years has been a supporter of school choice, highly passionate. Ayman Brown, and obviously the governor here. So for the president to come in here and kind of talk poorly about that, that would be a very grave, I think, you know, thing for him to do.
Bingo, too. I was wondering why Josh Shapiro, look, he may have something important today. He's not going to be there. I think the lieutenant governor, and again, to be with the president in Philadelphia in a situation like this, I think he would be there. But what Biden's going to say and what Biden's about is a little much different than, at least on paper, what Josh Shapiro says.
Yeah, Dom, that's true. I mean, why would a governor who has positive name ID across the state, want to affiliate himself with a president who has declining numbers. That doesn't make any political sense in my personal opinion. But I think there's a lot of factors at play, and one of which is that the president hasn't addressed the issues of Philadelphia communities, including the African-American community, Hispanic community. Here in Northeast Philadelphia, there's a lot of Caucasian families. I mean, we're all suffering from what inevitably has been Biden's policies. And we've had a 30% increase in food prices. When you go to the gas pump to fuel up, everything's expensive. Energy costs are up. I mean, it's just like, we're getting body slammed, and everyday people that are middle class families are trying to get by, and the people who are already in poverty, I mean, imagine what those families are going through
exactly.
In the city.
Now, on the other hand, and I saw a study the other day about many of these encampments and stuff going on, and this was from a liberal publication that said a great deal of them are people on these college campuses that are more elite. But what are you trying to do to bring some accountability to the stuff that's been going on?
Yeah, so, you know, we know that the Democrat radicals of the left are putting criminals first and victims last. They've done this. We've seen this over the past several years, and they're doing it again, right? There's these anti-Israel protesters on college campuses, and the legislators, myself and Kristen Marcel out of Bucks County area, have put forward are two pieces of legislation. What we saw on these campuses were just maddening. They went and are basically verbally attacking Jewish students. And I think that there's even been concerns around them attacking law enforcement officers when they were trying to be disbanded. So, you know, what we're trying to do is make sure that any students who are convicted of ethnic intimidation, institutional vandalism, desecration, theft, sale of venerated objects, or institutional trespassing from being able to receive FEA grants. So that's what my bill would do. And then Kristen Marcel's bill, it basically is a complementary piece to mine. It creates a new crime of actual institutional trespass, specifically targeting unlawful entry into sensitive areas like houses of worship, cemeteries, and schools. And I know vandalism is already penalized, but this definitely is a bill that will be helpful, because merely trespassing in these sacred institutions isn't something that should go unnoticed, and it needs to have additional protections in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully there are a few Democrats in the Senate. I think something like that would pass. How about in the House?
Yeah, you know, apparently a lot of reporters have been asking their leadership team, I think Matt Bradford was one of them, if they would consider these pieces of legislation. It sounded like once the language has been introduced that he may be willing to consider it. But I actually don't know how many of their legislators on their side of the aisle would actually support it. I mean, we saw Rep. Krajewski actually, according to, I guess it was the Washington Examiner, he was one of the people who warned the protesters that the police would be coming onto the campus within the next 24 hours. And there's supposedly text messages to that effect. So I imagine that there will be, you know, the radical left Democrats out in Harrisburg who will, just probably vote against these types of bills.
Well, at least we have you on the front lines. And Martina, I think it sounds to me, though, like Lifeline Scholarships is going to make it through this time. And I think you deserve a lot of credit on that. It would be revolutionary. It would be arguably the greatest good that legislators can do toward families and their kids.
Thank you so much, Dom. Yeah, we are so excited this year. We had a lot of progress last year, but I think this could be our time, and we just have to keep advocating and keep pushing and encourage constituents out there, citizens, you know, give your legislators a call and encourage them to be supportive, because now is the time. June is when all of the negotiations take place before the budget's due on June 30th, and I just want to encourage you guys. We could really use all of the support to call up your legislator.
Thank you, Martina. We'll keep on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care, guys.
Martina White is a real power in Harrisburg.
I'm hoping that her vision on this happens this time around and that we see this play out. We'll have more throughout the month of June as this develops. It's a national story right here in Pennsylvania. Coming up is commentator Guy Shiraki. He'll take us inside some of the nuts and bolts of this, of what has to happen, how it has to happen for this to become a reality. All that on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm going to teach you.
Hey, welcome into Reading, Writing, and Reason. This week, Pennsylvania national news. An unusual situation where the governor may want all this to play out as far as vouchers. And here is Guy Shiraki, commentator Shiraki, on how that might work. Guy, welcome in. Thanks for contacting us, too, to kind of amplify a little bit of what I've been saying about Girard College. This notion, Guy, and I'm kind of surprised that David Hardy, I love the guy, as you know, a big proponent of school choice. It's good for Girard College to have them there, but it's fraudulent.
Yeah, good afternoon, Dom. Yeah, well, first, look, the school is run by the City Board of Trust. So it is a decision made by a government agency, and it is the President of the United States. So I do want to run a little interference for our friend Dave Hardy. I have not spoken to him about it. But again, the school is governed by the City Board of Trust, by a group of government officials appointed by Democratic judges. So we may want to give Mr. Hardy a pass. What I won't give a pass is the national media, the Philadelphia media, that everything you just said, you'd have to listen to talk radio to know. The irony that Biden and Harris came to North Philadelphia to a school where every single child is there because the parents and guardians exercise choice, being an administration that is 100% opposed to school choice, the campaigns against school choice, takes money from people who are against school choice, to come to one of the poorest neighborhoods of Philadelphia and talk about the wonders of the Biden administration, all they've done for black people in a community that's suffering from crime, inflation, and bad schools, so much so that they found a way to get their kids in this school, and that no one outside of talk radio and folks like you are talking about it, is, once again, the press was asleep at the switch and missed the absolute irony, and no one asked that question. It is journalistic malpractice.
Well, you're the only one. I was unaware of that the city controls who goes there, because David Hardy is one of the biggest all-time proponents and successful people with school choice, particularly with African-American students, some of whom might have had a little rough around the edges till they went to Boys Latin and they were then successful. There's a heck of a story there with all this coverage of it, Guy. Do you think they just ignored it? Or, as I often think, they're also incompetent.
Well, look, there's a lot of stories, right? To be there as any reporter who cares anything about education, to not recognize that you're out of school, that first of all is not a college, it's a K-12 school, to not tell the statewide and national audience that it's not a college, it is a school for younger children, and to sit there, as you said, and have one of somebody that is recognized as a national leader. I mean, Dave Hardy is recruited nationally to give talks. He was recruited into Girard College to save it, to rescue it from the financial challenges it was facing. Here is one of the most dedicated, successful African-American leaders, and frankly, of any race, color, creed, or religion in America, and to not bend his ear for 5 minutes and ask him what he does at Girard College or what he did at Boys Latin was malpractice. But to also sit there and talk about the wonders of this administration and what they've done for black voters and not recognize they're in a school where every single family has chosen to leave the public schools of Philadelphia and find a safe haven where their children are safe and learning. Again, it just, to me, it's sitting them right in the face, and all they did was just show up, take pictures, and say, you know, Joe Biden loves black voters, and he brought Kamala Harris, and then they went and had a nice fancy schmancy dinner. It's just unbelievable to me. So who knows? Were they asleep at the switch? Were they lazy? I don't know. It's deeply disappointing. To not interview Dave Hardy is malpractice, and to not talk about school choice smacking them right in the face is malpractice. And frankly, if you walk a block, if a reporter had to drive to that school and see the community around there, but for a few of the oasis like Girard College or St. Joe's Prep, you see a community dealing with crime and empty storefronts and schools that don't work, and to not recognize that, that they're – look at the juxtaposition. I mean, look at those two things against each other. And again, the story is Joe Biden came to Philadelphia because he loves Philadelphia, and it's just malpractice to me.
It is. I'm very glad you're pointing it out. As you know, that's one of the reasons you're in business and I'm in business. The media doesn't do their job. They're either incapable, in the tank, or a combination of the two. And then, Guy, when the president gets up there and tells these little kids, kindergarten, first, second, fourth grade, that they don't want you to have Black history. And they're trying to rewrite that and get it out of there so you can't know about Black history. I can't imagine being inside the head of David Hardy at that point. My God.
Yeah, well, again, right, you're at a school of choice. You're at a school where every single child is there because a parent or guardian picked it. I assure you that the history lessons that they're learning, the civics lessons they're learning, the American history lessons they're learning are a full American history where you can both talk about the horrors of slavery, but how we overcame it. The horrors of Reconstruction and Jim Crow and how we overcame it. But we also talk about the founding of this nation and the wonders of the Constitution. And somehow schools like Girard College are able to do both and not suggest that there's this false choice or that you have to forget everything that happened before 2020 that's somehow sinful and horrible. But again, all those parents are there by choice. All of them by choice let their children return each year to this school. It's a school supported by Stephen Girard's trust and charitable donations. People, businesses, neighbors, corporations, people around the city, around the region donate there to give money to give these children a choice. And there it is dripping in irony about it. And Joe Biden talking about, the, in essence, the horrors of what happens when you have school choice sitting at a school that only exists through school choice. And it's just unbelievable to me to allow that, to suggest that would happen it belies the facts. It's sitting there. You didn't even have to do investigative reporting. All you had to do was drive to the school to see the neighborhood it's in. All you had to do was read their mission statement. And all you had to do was a Google search while you're sitting there on who, gee, I wonder who the CEO is and what he's ever done. He's one of the most successful educators in the United States of America. He defied the soft bigotry that young Black men can't learn. He brought in a Latin regimen that is every bit as strict, every bit as regimented, every bit as rigid as what happens three blocks away at St. Joe's Prep, and took them to national honors in studying Latin, a dead religion of centuries ago. And you have this giant of academia sitting there, and no one asks him, and no one asks him about boys' Latin. It is unbelievable. And as you pointed out, Joe Biden, as president of the United States, gets up and implies the exact opposite. It is scandalous.
It's a Potemkin village. Not that Dave Hardy did it, but that's what they set up there yesterday. That's exactly what it is. Thanks to Guy Shiraki for this. Our final guest this week on Reading, Writing, and Reason is Nina Welsh. Nina is a librarian at a private school in Scotland who quit being a librarian. She'll explain why and why it made news on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm gonna teach ya.
Hey, welcome into our last segment this week of Reading, Writing, and Reason. Nina Welsh joined me recently on my Noon to 3 show. Former librarian in Scotland wrote a brilliant column about why she quit. Here's what Nina Welsh told me. Nina, welcome to Philadelphia. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me on, Dan.
Well, I think that accent improved the show right there.
Right, it's great.
Yes, it's not impenetrable. So, Nina, tell us about the private school you were working at. And didn't you pick up that granddad's pride might be a book they would welcome?
Yeah. So I say in my article that I wrote for Unheard that my school, the school library I worked for, is quite archetypal for all schools, really, or maybe not all, but an awful lot of schools, particularly private schools, for some reason. Librarians want to celebrate Pride Month, and that's understandable. And naturally, they'll order books that booksellers recommend, you know, that seem to be on the hot list for books that you should share with children and teenagers, to improve their education and make them more tolerant, inclusive, whatever. But this one book, and make no mistake, like, I had many books that I had massive aversions to before that for various reasons, but this one book had hit some headlines because the book was both written and illustrated by a person called Harry Woodgate, who uses they, them pronouns. The story of the book, as I understand it, is a little girl with her granddad who is bereaved from his boyfriend / long-term partner, and they go to Pride together. And in the book, there were illustrations of the Pride parade they attended. And I'm really not making this up. The illustrations contained two men caressing in quite a sexual manner in leather fetish gear. Now, my understanding is these illustrations were removed in some publications of the book, but overall, it was really heralded as this, well, put it this way, it's been shortlisted on a prize just as recently as a month ago in the UK. So it seemed to me really representative of this weird thing that seems to be going in children's publishing, where you put a Pride Progress flag in front of a publisher's eyes and they just lose all their inhibitions.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm going to teach you.
Hey, welcome into Reading, Writing, and Reason. This week, Pennsylvania national news. An unusual situation where the governor may want all this to play out as far as vouchers. And here is Guy Shiraki, commentator Shiraki, on how that might work. Guy, welcome in. Thanks for contacting us, too, to kind of amplify a little bit of what I've been saying about Girard College. This notion, Guy, and I'm kind of surprised at David Hardy. I love the guy, as you know. A big proponent of school choice. It's good for Girard College to have them there, but it's fraudulent.
Yeah, good afternoon, Dom. Yeah, well, first, look, the school is run by the City Board of Trusts. So it is a decision made by a government agency, and it is the President of the United States. So I do want to run a little interference for our friend Dave Hardy. I have not spoken to him about it. But again, the school is governed by the City Board of Trusts, by a group of government officials appointed by Democratic judges. So we may want to give Mr. Hardy a pass. What I won't give a pass is the national media, the Philadelphia media, that everything you just said, you'd have to listen to talk radio to know. The irony that Biden and Harris came to North Philadelphia, to a school where every single child is there because the parents and guardians exercise choice, being an administration that is 100% opposed to school choice, the campaigns against school choice, takes money from people who are against school choice, to come to one of the poorest neighborhoods of Philadelphia and talk about the wonders of the Biden administration, all they've done for black people in a community that's suffering from crime, inflation, and bad schools, so much so that they found their kids, they found a way to get their kids in this school, and that no one outside of talk radio and folks like you are talking about it, is again, once again, it's the press was asleep at the switch and missed the absolute irony, and no one asked that question. It is journalistic malpractice.
Well, you're the only one. I was unaware of that, that the city controls who goes there, because David Hardy is one of the biggest all-time proponents and successful people with school choice, particularly with African-American students, some of whom might have had a little rough around the edges till they went to Boys Latin and they were then successful. There's a heck of a story there with all this coverage of it, Guy. Do you think they just ignored it? Or as I often think, they're also incompetent.
Well, look, there's a lot of stories, right? To be there as any reporter who cares anything about education, to not recognize that you're out of school, that first of all is not a college, it's a K to 12 school, to not tell the statewide and national audience that it's not a college, it is a school for younger children, and to sit there, as you said, and have somebody that's recognized as a national leader. I mean, Dave Hardy is recruited nationally to give talks. He was recruited into Girard College to save it, to rescue it from the financial challenges it was facing. Here is one of the most dedicated, successful African-American leaders, and frankly, of any race, color, creed, or religion in America. And to not bend his ear for 5 minutes and ask him what he does at Girard College or what he did at Boys Latin was malpractice. But to also sit there and talk about the wonders of this administration and what they've done for black voters and not recognize they're at a school where every single family has chosen to leave the public schools of Philadelphia and find a safe haven where their children are safe and learning. Again, it just, to me, it's sitting them right in the face, and all they did was just show up, take pictures, and say, you know, Joe Biden loves black voters, and he brought Kamala Harris, and then they went and had a nice fancy schmancy dinner. It's just unbelievable to me. Who knows? Were they asleep at the switch? Were they lazy? I don't know. It's deeply disappointing. To not interview Dave Hardy is malpractice, and to not talk about school choice smacking them right in the face is malpractice. And frankly, if you walk a block, if the reporter had to drive to that school and see the community around there, but for a few of the oases like Girard College or St. Joe's Prep, you see a community dealing with crime and empty storefronts and schools that don't work, and to not recognize that they're, look at the juxtaposition. I mean, look at those two things against each other. And again, the story is Joe Biden came to Philadelphia because he loves Philadelphia, and it's just malpractice to me.
It is. I'm very glad you're pointing it out. As you know, that's one of the reasons you're in business and I'm in business. The media doesn't do their job. They're either incapable, in the tank, or a combination of the two. And then, Guy, when the president gets up there and tells these little kids, kindergarten, first, second, fourth grade, that they don't want you to have black history. And they're trying to rewrite that and get it out of there so you can't know about black history. I can't imagine being inside the head of David Hardy at that point. My God.
Yeah, well, again, right, you're at a school of choice. You're at a school where every single child is there because a parent or guardian picked it. I assure you that the history lessons that they're learning, the civics lessons they're learning, the American history lessons they're learning, are a full American history where you can both talk about the horrors of slavery, but how we overcame it. The horrors of Reconstruction and Jim Crow and how we overcame it. But we also talk about the founding of this nation and the wonders of the Constitution. And somehow schools like Girard College are able to do both and not suggest that there's this false choice or that you have to forget everything that happened before 2020 that's somehow sinful and horrible. But again, all those are parents who are there by choice. All of them by choice let their children return each year to this school. It's a school supported by Stephen Girard's trust and charitable donations. People, businesses, neighbors, corporations, people around the city, around the region donate there to give money to give these children a choice. And there it is, dripping in irony about it. And Joe Biden talking about the, in essence, the horrors of what happens when you have school choice, sitting at a school that only exists through school choice. And it's just unbelievable to me to allow that, to suggest that would happen. It belies the facts. It's sitting there. You didn't even have to do investigative reporting. All you had to do was drive to the school to see the neighborhood it's in. All you had to do was read their mission statement. And all you had to do was a Google search while you're sitting there on who, gee, I wonder who the CEO is and what he's ever done. He's one of the most successful educators in the United States of America. He defied the soft bigotry that young black men can't learn. He brought in a Latin regimen that is every bit as strict, every bit as regimented, every bit as rigid as what happens three blocks away at St. Joe's Prep, and took them to national honors in studying Latin, a dead religion of centuries ago. And you have this giant of academia sitting there, and no one asks him, and no one asks him about boys' Latin. It is unbelievable. And as you pointed out, Joe Biden, as president of the United States, gets up and implies the exact opposite. It is scandalous.
It's a Potemkin village. Not that Dave Hardy did it, but that's what they set up there yesterday. That's exactly what it is. Thanks to Guy Shiraki for this. Our final guest this week on Reading, Writing, and Reason is Nina Welsh. Nina is a librarian at a private school in Scotland who quit being a librarian. She'll explain why and why it made news on Reading, Writing, and Reason.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm going to teach you.
Hey, welcome into our last segment this week of Reading, Writing, and Reason. Nina Welsh joined me recently on my Noon to 3 show. Former librarian in Scotland wrote a brilliant column about why she quit. Here's what Nina Welsh told me. Nina, welcome to Philadelphia. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me on, Dan.
Well, I think that accent improved the show right there.
Right, it's great.
Yes, it's not impenetrable. So, Nina, tell us about the private school you were working at. And didn't you pick up that granddad's pride might be a book they would welcome?
Yeah. So I say in my article that I wrote for Unheard that the school library I worked for is quite archetypal for all schools, really, or maybe not all, but an awful lot of schools, particularly private schools, for some reason. Librarians want to celebrate Pride Month, and that's understandable. And naturally, they'll order books that booksellers recommend, that seem to be on the hot list for books that you should share with children and teenagers, to improve their education and make them more tolerant, inclusive, whatever. But this one book, and make no mistake, like I had many books that I had massive aversions to before that for various reasons, but this one book had hit some headlines because the book was both written and illustrated by a person called Harry Woodgate, who uses they/them pronouns, the story of the book, as I understand it, is a little girl with her granddad who is bereaved from his boyfriend / long-term partner, and they go to Pride together. And in the book, there were illustrations of the Pride parade they attended, and I'm really not making this up. The illustrations contained two men caressing in quite a sexual manner in leather fetish gear. Now, my understanding is these illustrations were removed in some publications of the book, but overall, it was really heralded as this, put it this way, it's been shortlisted on a prize just as recently as a month ago in the UK. So it seemed to me really representative of this weird thing that seems to be going in children's publishing, where you put a Pride Progress flag in front of a publisher's eyes and they just lose all their inhibitions.
Yeah, you also write here, too, why didn't I speak out about them all then, in your country? And there was something going on at the time. The Gender Recognition Reform Bill was not yet defeated. So what was the Gender Recognition Reform Bill?
Right. So in Scotland, there was a law it was passed. Basically, the law stated that So originally, for a person to legally change their gender, or that's to say to legally change their sex, i.e. to be recognised in a different sex under the law, which would mean access to spaces of that sex. Originally, I think we had quite a good balance. You had to live in your acquired gender for 2 years, whatever living in your gender means, really. You had to undergo a medical analysis, and you had to be over the age of 18. So the Scottish government had proposed this really quite unbelievable bill where they would shorten that to 3 months, remove any need for medical discussion, and it would be lowered to 16 years old, which basically meant that people, I suppose men with nefarious purposes, could very easily... all you had to say, basically, the phrase that was used was self-ID. So the second a person says, I am this sex or I am this gender, that's it, no questions asked. So, you know, legally a man could say, right, exactly. I'm a woman. And in that second, under the law, he's a woman.
We're talking with Nina Welsh in this column today. And Nina, I wanted to ask you, you go into this, librarians in general, this is around the world, we've seen it in the United States. After you've exposed some of this, after you had to quit from this, the fetish gear and Pride Month, what is it, what's your sense of the change with librarians? It's one thing that the librarians not be seen as so-called old maids, just dusty books and all that. That was a good change of the image. But you talk about TikTok and librarians, and it's gone way beyond that into this activist type of thing.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of talk, and certainly in America as well, I know about this, about teachers who seem to be mistaking their role as being activists rather than, you know, teachers and pushing certain agendas. I think the interesting thing about a librarian is that a librarian is very similar to a teacher, but they don't have... you know, you don't mark papers. It's a really interesting role, the librarian. You're like a cross between a teacher and a friend, I'd almost say, you know, but you're still a figure of authority. And I mean, like I said, it might sound quite laughable because you think of the librarian as being, you know, this person at a cardigan stamping books at their desk. But there's a really interesting power in being a school librarian. You know, you decide the collection and you're sort of pushing certain morals and ideas and stories onto children. And something that I say in the article is I've noticed, and I don't say this with any, you know, I'm not saying this happily, but I think that mixture of power or status and nurture attracts in particular young progressive women who are particularly attracted to the sort of ideologies behind this for those reasons. That mixture of power and nurture is something I think that needs more focus.
Yeah, no, it's a hotbed here in our suburbs, Nina. Several school districts even made national news around battles associated with this. What do you offer if you do, coming through this, writing about it, you take a broad look at it, what's the solution to this, to stop this type of stuff? They have more balance, I'd say, here.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, where I live, so the United Kingdom, but I'm specifically in Scotland, the thing is, this is a top-down problem, you know, because this is what I say in the article that I wrote. As a school librarian, I could take up a fight with libraries, but beyond this is a fight with children's publishing, you know, and both of them are quite interlinked. It's going to take, and I think we're already seeing signs of this in America, a huge grassroots movement of parents, teachers, and librarians coming together until this is no longer a fringe issue. And, you know, what does pain me with children's literature is, you know, I am so passionate about children being exposed to books that challenge them. That's important in childhood, you know, that disturb them, that educate them. But there's just been this complete abdication of common sense in children's publishing. You know, I never thought I'd be the person saying, we need to... you know, I hate using this word, but, you know, we need to really take a look at not censoring, but maybe, removing certain books from the library collection. I never thought I'd be the person saying that, but there's just been this complete abdication of common mm-hmm. sense, and authors posturing, sorry, activists posturing as authors. It's not even, I mean, even the most liberal person should surely agree that feeding deliberate untruths to children through literature, feeding really sordid imagery deliberately to children, you know, that's, you know, as I've said, if you're asking for a solution, it's just going to take a huge, it's not going to be easy, it's not going to be overnight, but yeah, just exactly. Parents, teachers, and librarians coming together. And basically, I mean, in the UK, I said you basically need an inquiry into children's publishing at this point. And thank maybe you need that in America too. Yeah.
Absolutely. Nina, thank you. Why I Quit as a School Librarian, Progressive Activism is Now Considered the Norm. Nina, thank you. Thanks for taking the time, and thanks for the delightful accent. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
Hey, that wraps it up for this week's edition of Reading, Writing, and Reason. Tell people about it. Thanks for listening here. Reading, Writing, and Reason.
You need a lesson, gonna bring it to you now.
Today's program has been pre-recorded.
I'm gonna teach ya.
Hey, welcome into our last segment this week of Reading, Writing, and Reason. Nina Welsh joined me recently on my Noon to 3 show. Former librarian in Scotland wrote a brilliant column about why she quit. Here's what Nina Welsh told me. Nina, welcome to Philadelphia. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me on, Dan.
Well, I think that accent improved the show right there.
Right, it's
right
great.
There. It's great. Yes, it's not impenetrable. So, Nina, tell us about the private school you were working at. And didn't you pick up that grandpa's pride might be a granddad's pride, might be a book they would welcome?
Yeah. So I say in my article that I wrote for Unheard that my school, the school library I worked for, is quite archetypal for all schools, really, or maybe not all, but an awful lot of schools, particularly private schools, for some reason. Librarians want to celebrate Pride Month, and that's understandable. And naturally, they'll order books that booksellers recommend, that they seem to be on the hot list for books that you should share with children and teenagers, to improve their education and make them more tolerant, inclusive, whatever. But this one book, and make no mistake, like I had many books that I had massive aversions to before that for various reasons, but this one book had hit some headlines because the book was both written and illustrated by a person called Harry Woodgate, who uses they/them pronouns, the story of the book, as I understand it, is a little girl with her granddad who is bereaved from his boyfriend / long-term partner, and they go to Pride together. And in the book, there were illustrations of the Pride parade they attended, and I'm really not making this up. The illustrations contained two men caressing in quite a sexual manner in leather fetish gear. Now, my understanding is these illustrations were removed in some publications of the book, but overall, it was really heralded as this, put it this way, it's been shortlisted on a prize just as recently as a month ago in the UK. So it seemed to me really representative of this weird, this weird thing that seems to be going in children's publishing, where you put a Pride Progress flag in front of a publisher's eyes and they just lose all their inhibitions.
Yeah, you also write here, too, why didn't I speak out about them all then, you know, yes. In your country? And there was something going on at the time. The Gender Recognition Reform Bill was not yet defeated. So what was the Gender Recognition Reform Bill?
Right. So in Scotland, there was a law it was passed. Basically, the law stated that So originally, for a person to legally change their gender, or that's to say to legally change their sex, i.e. to be recognised in a different sex under the law, which would mean access to spaces of that sex. Originally, I think we had quite a good balance. You had to live in your acquired gender for 2 years, whatever living in your gender means, really. You had to undergo a medical analysis, and you had to be over the age of 18. So the Scottish government had proposed this really quite unbelievable bill where they would shorten that to 3 months, remove any need for medical discussion, and it would be lowered to 16 years old, which basically meant that people, I suppose men with nefarious purposes, could very easily... all you had to say, basically, the phrase that was used was self-ID. So the second a person says, I am this sex or I am this gender, that's it. No questions asked. So, you know, legally a man could say, right. Exactly. I'm a woman. And in that second, under the law, he's a woman.
We're talking with Nina Welsh in this column today. And Nina, I wanted to ask you, you go into this, librarians in general, this is around the world, we've seen it in the United States. After you've exposed some of this, after you had to quit from this, the fetish gear and Pride Month, what is it, what's your sense of the change with librarians? It's one thing that the librarians not be seen as so-called old maids, just dusty books and all that. That was a good change of the image. But you talk about TikTok and librarians, and it's gone way beyond that into this activist type of thing.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of talk, and certainly in America as well, I know about this, about teachers who seem to be mistaking their role as being activists rather than, you know, teachers and pushing certain agendas. I think the interesting thing about librarian is that a librarian is very similar to a teacher, but they don't have... you know, you don't mark papers. It's a really interesting role, the librarian. You're like a cross between a teacher and a friend, I'd almost say, you know, but you're still a figure of authority. And, I mean, like I said, it might sound quite laughable because you think of the librarian as being, you know, this person at a cardigan stamping books at their desk, but there's a really interesting power in being a school librarian. You know, you decide the collection and you're sort of pushing certain morals and ideas and stories onto children. And something that I say in the article is I've noticed, and I don't say this with any, you know, I'm not saying this happily, but I think that mixture of power or status and nurture attracts in particular young progressive women, who are particularly attracted to the sort of ideologies behind this for those reasons. That mixture of power and nurture is something I think that needs more focus.
Yeah, no, it's a hotbed here in our suburbs, Nina. Several school districts even made national news around battles associated with this. What do you offer if you do, coming through this, writing about it, you take a broad look at it, what's the solution to this, to stop this type of stuff? They have more balance, I'd say, here.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, where I live, so United Kingdom, but I'm specifically in Scotland, the thing is, this is a top-down problem, you know, because this is what I say in the article that I wrote. As a school librarian, I could take up a fight with libraries, but beyond this is a fight with children's publishing. You know, and both of them are quite interlinked. It's going to take, and I think we're already seeing signs of this in America, a huge grassroots movement of parents, teachers, and librarians coming together until this is no longer a fringe issue. And, you know, what does pain me with children's literature is, you know, I am so passionate about children being exposed to books, that challenge them. That's important in childhood, you know, that disturb them, that educate them. But there's just been this complete abdication of common sense in children's publishing. You know, I never thought I'd be the person saying, we need to you know, I hate using this word, but, you know, we need to really take a look at not censoring, but maybe, removing certain books from the library collection. I never thought I'd be the person saying that, but there's just been this complete abdication of common mm-hmm. sense, and activists posturing as authors. It's not even, I mean, even the most liberal person should surely agree that feeding deliberate untruths to children through literature, feeding really sordid imagery deliberately to children, you know, as I've said, if you're asking for a solution, it's just going to take a huge, it's not going to be easy, it's not going to be overnight, but just
exactly.
Parents, teachers, and librarians coming together. And basically, I mean, in the UK, I said you basically need an inquiry into children's publishing at this point. And
thank
maybe
you
need that in America, too. Yeah.
Absolutely. Nina, thank you. Why I Quit as a School Librarian, Progressive Activism is Now Considered the Norm. Nina, thank you. Thanks for taking the time, and thanks for the delightful accent. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
Hey, that wraps it up for this week's edition of Reading, Writing, and Reason. Tell people about it. Thanks for listening here. Reading, Writing, and Reason.
You need a lesson, gonna bring it to you now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.